Welcome to Moolala, Money Made Simple on SiriusXM. Here's your host, Bruce Sellery.
Hello, I'm Bruce Sellery. This is Moolala, Money Made Simple. Themed retirement residences for retired teachers, nuns, and nudists. We'll talk to Sue Johansson about these specialty retirement homes. She's from a company called A Place Called Mom. Then we'll look at one example, a really inspiring example. It's called the Performing Arts Lodges of Canada, and its mission is to offer affordable housing to retired professional artists. We're going to talk to Adrian Lucis and Patty Gale Peaker from PAL Canada. Then a new fintech called Fox Quilt is promising to save you money on insurance. Their approach using social groups. Mark Morissette is the CEO of the company. And speaking of savings, we'll look at an app that helps even months or weeks after you've purchased something save money. It's called Price Drop, and it notifies you when a cheaper price is found. Plus, we're going to talk about a new line of credit connected to your insurance policy. What? All that is ahead. Let's get started. Jimmy Buffett is opening up a Margaritaville-themed retirement residence. There are places that serve alumni of certain universities. There's retirement residences for retired teachers, retired nuns, former stars of stage and silver screen, and even, I found one online, even for nudists. Sue Johansson is the Vice President of Partner Services at A Place for Mom, and she's here to talk about this big idea of themed retirement communities. She joins us from San Francisco. Hello there.
Hi, how are you?
This is more prominent of an idea in the United States, at least from my online research. Can you give us some examples of themed retirement residences that you've come across? Or did I just hit off all the interesting ones in my introduction there? Is that all there is to say?
No, absolutely not. Really, you know, senior living is about having seniors transition in the most comfortable way possible. So having themed senior living communities helps seniors feel more at home with other like-minded seniors, obviously. And so there are senior communities who have high concentration of pets for those seniors who are pet lovers. There are senior communities with an artistic bend. There are senior communities who serve the LGBTQ community, and many senior communities that are affiliated with universities so that they can take advantage of some of the lectures that the universities offer. In addition, many of the communities offer university students the opportunity to get hands-on experience. So it's a great mix of young, vital energy from the students at the universities, getting real hand experience with seniors, and having the seniors be exposed to people who are passionate about working with them. So it really for a great dynamic.
Do you have any idea what market share these themed retirement residencies would have in the U.S.? Because I think for the most part, when I'm a Gen Xer, when my generation thinks about where our parents are going to be, really it just seems like, where are we going to be able to find a spot, let alone a spot that allows for pets and university lectures?
Well, it's really becoming, you know, more prominent than you might think. If you look at all the specialty senior living communities and you include things like university affiliated and pets and things like that, it's probably 40% to 50% of the marketplace right now. And senior living has changed so much in the last 10 years. There are luxury communities opening all the time that are really springing up to serve the baby boomer generation, which is just beginning to enter into retirement and senior living communities. So anything from virtual reality theaters to sushi bars, really anything that you can think of. I was at a community and the virtual reality theater was focused on a trip to Italy. And of course, then their dining room featured all Italian meals that evening. So it really is not your grandmother's senior living any longer.
It sounds like what we would think of as a cruise ship these days in terms
exactly.
of amenities and entertainment.
Exactly.
What
right.
is the cost paradigm? When you start theming, yeah. is it more, same, or less? And I know I'm asking you to generalize, which is an impossible mm-hmm. thing to do given the range.
Sure. Yeah, I think, you know, it depends on what it is again. So for pets, for instance, there are senior living communities at all levels that accept pets. When you start talking about things like virtual reality theaters or, you know, lectures from Stanford University, those kinds of things, they tend to be affiliated with more upscale communities. So, you know, the more upscale the amenities, like on a cruise ship, usually the more expensive the overall experience would be. But I would say that usually you can find something appropriate at all levels, depending on kind of the individual niche that you're looking for.
Do these themed residences, are they able to offer the same promise of continuity of care? And I ask because for a lot of seniors, they really need to be able to progress through the various stages that may be connected to their health. And I think it would be dislocating for some to be, woo, I'm with my university alumni, and then all of a sudden I'm in, you know, a very, very different scenario because of the dementia that I'm dealing with. How does continuity of care work in this environment?
Yeah, I think aging in place, which is kind of what you're talking about, is really important. And so, again, such a variety of options out there. I think really, you know, the best thing to do for a senior looking for the right environment is to tour. And one of the things that you want to make sure you do is ask all the right questions. You know, A Place for Mom offers a document, and you can get them at a lot of places, that's called a Tips for Touring. You really want to find out when you tour someplace, if you feel that affinity, if you feel like it's the right environment. And you want to prepare for the future. So you want to ask, do they have a memory care, you know, neighborhood in the community? Can they handle high acuity care? You know, what are the programs that the property offers for increased levels of care as a senior ages? And so I think they're not mutually exclusive. I think, again, it's community specific, but you want to make sure that you find those niche communities that fit from a lifestyle standpoint, and then ask the right questions about care so that you make ultimately the right decision.
When is the right time to do those tours? And I ask because if it's too early, there's a risk for the kids that the parents are going to think like they're trying to shovel them off somewhere. And if it's too late, it may be that, you know, we needed a spot yesterday and there isn't a spot, or, you know, it's harder to settle in at later periods in life for a whole bunch of reasons.
Right.
What wisdom would you have for when those tours should happen?
My philosophy is, and our philosophy at A Place for Mom is, that it's never too early to have the conversation with your parents. And it's never too early to tour. Better to have a solid plan in place so that everybody knows when you don't have any cognitive issues, when you've got your health, you're making great decisions, but also plan for what those milestone markers are. Oftentimes people will say, oh, at the death of a spouse, I don't want to live alone any longer. Or when I can no longer drive, it's appropriate for me to move. So have the conversations early, set what your priorities are, and then be realistic about setting some milestones that may be time for you to make the move. You know, people need to plan for those things. And as you said, the earlier a senior can transition into senior living, the more that they're going to get the benefit. If you wait until somebody is very sick, very high acuity care, it's a very difficult time to transition. And there are, of course, all kinds of stats about why communal living is positive for seniors and the benefits they get from socialization, cognitive stimulation, the proper diet, medication management. All of those things are key to helping seniors live better longer.
How does A Place for Mom work? Do your associates visit residences, themed or otherwise? How do they make their recommendations, and how does your company make its money?
Sure. So we have senior living advisors that are local to their communities all across the country. They do
Canada as well. Canada and the U.S.
Canada as well. Exactly.
Yep.
Canada and the U.S. They go out to local communities. They get to know them. They work with seniors and the advisors at the communities all the time. So they've got great relationships. We have a CRM program that allows partners, the communities, to update things like activity schedules and menus. And so we keep really tuned into what the partners offer. We are free families throughout the U.S. and Canada, and we are paid from a partner community when a resident moves in. And also our employees are not incented to earn more when they refer somebody to a very high-end community or a very low-end community. They are neutral to where that family ends up moving. So it allows us to be kind of third-party experts and not tied to any one particular community type.
Now, would that would necessitate that you have relationships with every single community out there, wouldn't it? Or are there some communities that you wouldn't refer to because you don't have that relationship?
Well, both is true. So we don't work with every single community out there. We have a pretty pretty thorough licensing vetting. So we work only with licensed communities that don't have infractions from the state. So we keep current with our standards as well. And then there are some communities that tend to be constantly full that may not engage with us. In the U.S., I think we're at about 86% of all communities in the United States, and in Canada, we're newer to Canada, so I think it's roughly around 70%.
What are the risk factors of themed retirement residences? And what I mean by that is there can be the shiny, sparkly part that has you feel like, oh, this would be a perfect place for me. What are the things that you would ask a potential resident to really consider before they make a move to hang out with the teachers or the nuns or whatever the group affiliation is?
Right. I would, again, it's about care management. It's about aging in place. It's about, there may be a lot of nuns or teachers, whatever, but what are the activities? Not all nuns like to do the same things, and not all teachers are affiliated in the same way. So really getting, we always say that it's great when you're going to tour a community, go at a mealtime. That's a couple of different reasons. First of all, like on a cruise ship, food is very important to people. Second, you get to see the entire population of the community together. So you see how you fit into the general, residency of the community. And then the third is you get to see how the staff interacts with the residents and are they laughing? What are the relationships like? So really to do that, experience a meal, take a look at their activity schedule, meet with the medical director, ensure that, if you've got some early cognitive issues and that likely cognitive issues, dementia, Alzheimer's are going to be an issue for you. Ensure that you really understand their programming and how that transition will work. When would you have to move apartments or would you? All of those things are really important.
Sue, just for the record, my mom and I have done the tour, so we are set. I just wanted you to know that I walk the talk here.
I'm very happy.
Whew. Sue, thanks for your time.
You as well. Have a great day.
Sue Johansson is Vice President of Partner Services at A Place for Mom, and she was here to talk to us about some of the themed retirement residences that are becoming more of a thing.
You're listening to Moolah La, Money Made Simple, with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Themed retirement residences. They're relatively rare here in Canada, but one example is the Performing Arts Lodges of Canada, or PAL. The first location opened in 1993 in a 9-story building with 205 apartments located in Toronto. PAL is a charitable foundation with chapters in major cities from Halifax to Vancouver, and it provides support and affordable housing for both seniors and disadvantaged members in the professional arts community. Adrian Lucis is the executive director of PAL Canada, and Patty Gail Peaker is the chapter director for PAL Toronto. They join us now. Hello there to you both.
Hello.
Hello.
Patty, I want to start with you. How did PAL come to be? You have been around since the beginning.
Yes.
You know where the bodies are buried.
Yes, I do, actually. A group established from another theater group called the Smile Theater Company. They were performers there. They were talking about the difficulty with seniors in the performing arts, having people to take care of them when they age. And it, long and short, that's where it established. And the group began to talk, that's all.
And they talk and talk and talk, and then all of a sudden there's this facility.
That's right.
And in more than one city. Adrian, yes. Tell it. Give us the big picture here for PAL. How would you summarize its role in Canada today? Chapters across the country, but residences in a number of those cities.
So residences in three cities, in Toronto, Stratford, and Vancouver, and we're getting a new building in Vancouver, in New West. So the purpose of PAL Canada as a national organization is really to establish chapters across the country. So we currently have a request in Victoria. We have a request in Kitchener. We have one in Hamilton. We have one in Montreal. And the purpose is really to raise awareness of the plight of artists. People do not understand that a lot of people like Patty Gail Peaker, who worked in the arts all their lives, but never became stars. Not everyone is a star in this industry. But they've given to the country, they've provided. And unfortunately, some come to the nearing their ends of their careers and they don't have the type of money to support themselves that you would hope they would have. That they worked in any other industry where they were paid properly going along, they would be fine. But unfortunately, they get to a point where they need assistance. So that's where PAL comes in, and we try to create affordable housing. We have a program called Supporting Cast, which is an outreach program where we go into the homes of different artists who may need help with basic assistance like going to the grocery, non-medical services.
Patty, what would our listeners notice if they were to spend time in a PAL residence? Please tell me there is a weekly Broadway trivia night and lunchtime excursions to the Fringe Festival.
There's that. Plus, certainly in our chapter, and I'm sure in Stratford, and I know in Vancouver, there is activities going daily.
Right.
Daily, nightly, whatever. The art is there.
The personalities
They live, and they work within the building and still without the building. There are still many that can go to work temporarily, short-lived or whatever. But they make the life for themselves because they are with their own. They can talk the same language. They can scream, holler, and do all those things. They get along well. They don't get along well. They all come back together. It's like family living. And certainly at PAL Toronto, we love it there. And I know Vancouver is excellent, and Stratford, we just need more of them, and we need the support for them.
Adrian, how does someone become a resident? What's the application process? What's the eligibility? Do you need an equity card or something like that?
So Patty could actually better answer that question because she's...
Well, the application and all the information is online, for one thing. For pretty well all the chapters, the eight of them have some website of some form online. And you have to be a member of the industry for a fairly good measurable professional working time of your life, 15, 25 years, something like that. Things are flexible. It depends on your condition. And some of the mandates vary from province to province a little bit.
How hard is it to get a spot? I know for seniors across the country, in any community, and sometimes no matter what price you pay, it's hard to get a spot. How hard is it at PAL?
Extremely hard. Currently it's 4 to 6 years.
Waiting list.
Yeah. Long. Whether it's rent geared to income or market rate, you best put your application in now and pray.
Adrian, how does PAL receive its funding? How does that model work?
He laughed there.
Yeah. Are you setting yourself up for a donor drive or something like that?
Definitely, we're all in donor drive mode because we do not get any. The national organization gets no support from the government. We do an event every year at the end of the year. It's a concert called Supporting Cast. We get support from ACTRA annually, AFBS, ACTRA Fraternal Benefit Society, Equity, IATSE, and the Canadian Federation of Musicians. We also get support from a branch of IATSE in New York. Other than that, it's all fundraising to private individuals, and it's very difficult.
How do the financials come together, given that artists typically work in major centers, Stratford being an exception. But if you worked in the performing arts, you probably worked in a major center. And yet those are the centers that are the most expensive. It would be so much more convenient if artists only worked in rural areas and you could have residences that were not in these ridiculously expensive real estate.
I think in Toronto, Patty Gale and her group did an amazing job of lobbying the government at the time to get behind them to build the building on
Took
the Esplanade.
Eight years.
And Vancouver, that's a different story where the municipalities are mandated, the developers are mandated to provide, I believe it's 10% of their building to affordable housing. We don't have that in Ontario at this point. So, and in other provinces, it's easier in Vancouver for them to get another building than it is for us in Ontario.
I am, you're singing to the choir here because I have a deep connection to the arts. What is one thing, Patty, that you would like for our listeners to know about PAL and to know about the retirement stage of life for Canadian performing artists that they might not appreciate if they didn't have a connection to this community?
I think that it's the camaraderie, the social life, the feeling of being at home, of being safe, protected, that there are avenues within the PALs and the supporting cast outreach programs that can be ever so helpful if you just call, no matter what chapter you live in or near. And all of them are not up and bricks and mortar, but supporting cast can help. As Adrian said, an outreach program, you call and say, I need this, I need a walker, I need somebody to help me to the hospital. I need a lot of needs, including advocacy.
Mm. The show must go on.
Absolutely.
Thank you to you
and
both.
It is.
And it is and it will. Thank Adrian Lucas is the executive director of PAL Canada. Patty Gale Peaker is the chapter director of PAL Toronto.
Thank you for having us.
Coming up next on Moolala, a community-based insurance technology company. The CEO and founder of FoxQuilt, Mark Morissette, will be here. And later, we'll talk to Meridian's Andrew Homan about their latest pilot project, an app called Price Drop. And if you have a question about money, I might already have answered it. Who knows? I'm a columnist for Money Sense. You can find our segments at moneysense.ca. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Moolala, Money Made Simple, with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Finding inexpensive insurance coverage is no easy task, especially if you're not a member of a group that qualifies for some sort of a discount. But perhaps there are groups you haven't thought of. FoxQuilt is a new fintech company that says it harnesses the power of social groups to help consumers save money on home and auto insurance. Mark Morissette is the CEO and founder of FoxQuilt. He joins us now. Hello there.
Hi, thanks for having me, Bruce.
What does FoxQuilt mean? That's a made-up name. Foxes don't quilt. I know this.
I can't take credit for the name or the brand. That's my wife.
Credit or blame.
She came up with it, and it's a clever name, we think, because it all likens back to the essence of what we are, and that's around social grouping. Fox meaning clever, the blanket quilt meaning patches or squares coming together, stitched together to make the group or the collective, and we want to be clever group.
Tell us more about this model.
Well, back in 2015-16, my partner and I were the insurance executives at another fintech company that we're proud to call home for some time called Real Matters. And we were scaling that business in the U.S. and we looked around at all the different smart strategies within the insurance space, and lots of good work in moving the needle forward as far as digitizing insurance online and creating a quicker turnaround as far as quoting. But my partner, Krim, and I looked at it so that we can do so much more for the consumer. And we wanted to really introduce a group buying power product that would basically add value at all three pillars of the life cycle of the policy, meaning when you purchase up front, why can't we join like-minded consumers or businesses seeking the same type of insurance and reward them with group buying power? At claim, pillar two, why can't we subsidize each other's deductibles in a sharing model? Mm. And more importantly, at pillar three, renewal, certainly there should be a reward. at renewal if you've had positive claims behavior.
My insurance for many years was I got a discount from my employer. And even when I left the employer, I still got that discount. What are some of the groups that you're focused on? I noticed on the bios of the folks on your website, it's like, I don't know, soccer moms, runners, people with brown hair, like hilarious groups. Yeah.
Well, we're excited to test and measure strength against lots of different localized identities, how we shape and form those over time. It changes. And group insurance is nothing new. It's been around a long time, but it hasn't changed over time. It's been exclusive and finite to some of those larger organizations you're talking about, meaning associations or unions or professional designations. We want to open up the sharing economy model to everybody and anybody that basically is associated with a smaller community. Whether you're runners, whether you're a runner, whether you're a pet lover, your identity changes. I'm no longer an alumni of McMaster University. That's changed.
Did they take your degree away?
Well,
you lose your degree?
It's still there.
You're an alumni for life. Don't worry.
You can register me. It's still there. But I really shape my identity around my friends, around beer league hockey. I'm a proud cottager. I'm a dad of a swimmer and a hockey player. So it's changing. And 10 years from now, I might be a gardener. I doubt that. I'll probably never be a gardener.
Maybe 20 or 30 years from now.
20 or 30.
Now, actuaries have an enormous role in insurance. They look at all the numbers here. How hard is it to get quotes on where a condo owner is a better risk on insurance than a pet lover? How do you – because with other things, you can say, well, we've got the demographics. We've got the data to say that a non-smoker has a longer life than a smoker, to use life as an example. How do you do that same thinking in auto and property on these kind of made-up groups?
Yeah, it's a great question. My partner, Krim, is the failed actuary. So we had a long run managing the P&Ls at underwriting centers, Aviva Canada and such. And some of those carrier partners are the partners that we've basically partnered with to basically raise new product around these segmented communities. And they're just as interested as us rather than looking at kind of that normal triangulation of data around postal codes and geography, et cetera, around our property data attributes. They're really interested in seeing these small pockets of localized community where people are trading, communicating, buying their retail experience online, what that will shape up for as far as a risk profile. So,
couldn't I just make up the fact that I'm a runner and get a better rate? How would you ever know?
You can to start with, but we're looking.
I am a runner. Look at me, please.
Hey, you're lean.
Lean.
You don't need a 2019 resolution.
I do not.
No, we're looking at you can sign up to be a runner as far as your identity has changed. But when we collect your data as far as quoting on a home insurance policy, we'll know where you're located. And we still want to say, hey, actuarially, if you're committing to be a runner, you're primarily you're probably in good shape. You're affluent. You're a homeowner. And we'll have a lot more data characteristics and attributes through different data API partnerships.
Is this a direct business versus a broker-driven business?
Well, in the traditional sense of the word, you can call us a broker because we're still an advocate and a conduit between consumer and insurance partner. The contract or the treaty is still with those 500-year-old companies like Aviva Canada. But we still liken ourselves to be an insure tech broker, meaning we've built a full stack platform from scratch through AWS and allows us to kind of expand vertically and horizontally using and harnessing more data.
So as a consumer, I go onto your platform. Yeah. Are you using the information that I provide you to go out to the Avivas of the world and come back to me with the best quote?
Absolutely. We can provide a quote online in a minute. So if you're looking for a home insurance quote or a car insurance quote, you can get a price driven through our platform in a minute.
Would it be simple to say you're Bel Air Direct except for you've got social groups?
Right, but we also have the broader offering of lots of choice and carrier partnerships, plus really, really interesting discount models and savings for across those social groups. So with Bel Air Direct, you're tying yourself directly to that carrier, right? And you're advocating your own interests if there happens to be a claim. you still have Fox Quilt to champion your cause throughout that whole life cycle of the policy. And we also get to empower that group buying power across many different insurance companies.
How wide is the spread on competitive quotes? Because I did this partly to walk the talk and partly because I needed to go and review my insurance. I was blown away in the event how much in the end, rather, how much I ended up paying on property versus what I had been paying the years prior when I hadn't done the due diligence. It was a massive savings.
It can be huge. And we pride ourselves when we're champions of saving the bottom dollar for the consumer and small businesses for that matter. And we love showing that, online we'll show that we're saving it 10% to 25%, but many times, oftentimes more, my closest friends and family are surprised by how much they've been paying for the last 10 years. I had a brother who was basically a teacher, and he's champion. He's very loyal to his broker and to his insurance product. I said, "It's time for you to join Fox Quilt and join your brother's business here." And when I saved him $1,000, that's substantial.
Then he realized he loved you.
That's right.
It was only in that moment.
Hugs.
Hugs and everything. Now, how do you differ from just an insurance rate comparison site? Because there are many of those out there online.
Well, we like to say that we're the antithesis of those aggregators. So we're not just a lead generator that's basically spawning off to many different brokerages.
Yeah.
So we have full capacity and underwriting authority to quote and to bind in concert with our carrier partners. So we're offering full suite of services. So home, auto, commercial insurance, we're going to take care of all your needs right through the entire life cycle of the policy. So servicing and administration, claim, at renewal, we're going to champion it again. So we don't want to disrupt and churn out that customer experience. We want to actually invest in the technology that automates it, makes it a richer retail experience. That's the other part of the equation, is that there's been really good innovation around making a better online experience for consumers to get quicker, faster quotes. But we look at that as table stakes. We really want to evoke that emotional kind of brand identity around a proper retail experience online.
Super quick question before we go here. Is there another example of a business that leverages social groups in this way, just not in insurance? Does that happen other places? The Facebookization, just made that up, of businesses?
Yeah, I mean, we emulate. On the retail side, going back to my e-commerce wife, retail executive, we emulate group retail brands that have really, really captured and advocated for consumer buying power. The Groupons, everyone knows it, traditional Groupons, but companies like Mass Drop in San Francisco. So if you have an identity around basically an outdoor sportsman and you like that men's apparel that are attached to that, you can really piggyback others around the United States to basically leverage buying power. So the retailer is always 20 years ahead of us. Financial services have to look toward those verticals to say, let's get there.
Mark Morissette, CEO and founder of Fox Quilt. Thank you very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Bruce.
Coming up later, we're going to take you through the Moolala How I Do It segment with Equitable Bank's Mahima Podar. But next, we're going to talk to Mahima about Equitable Bank's new CSV line of credit. That stands for Cash Surrender Value. Now, we're hanging out on the radio. I also do a lot of TV. I'm the money columnist for CityLine. You can check out segments from CityLine at cityline.tv. CityLine.tv. Stay with us. There's more Moolala after the break.
You're listening to Moolala, Money Made Simple, with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
There are insurance products and there are lines of credit. Equitable Bank has just launched a new product called the Cash Surrender Value Line of Credit that combines the two. Mahima Podar is Equitable Bank's Vice President of Corporate and Product Development. She joins us now. Hello there.
Hi there.
Okay, listeners, stay with me. Stay with me. This is a very complicated name for a product. Would you agree with me?
It was supposed to be exactly what it is.
Right. It's very descriptive, but it doesn't really, it's not got much sizzle to it. So tell me, first off, who this line of credit is for and how it works.
Sure. So the line of credit is for any Canadian who's over the age of 50 that holds a participating whole life insurance policy. And basically what the CSV line of credit lets you do is borrow against the cash surrender value of your participating life insurance policy. So
is it similar to a line of credit secured against another investment? Like you've got non-registered mutual funds and many institutions will grant you a line of credit based like at 80% or whatever the threshold is. Is it kind of like that?
It is kind of like that, but the unique thing about a life insurance policy is the cash surrender value is guaranteed. And so Equitable Bank can get comfortable with that underlying collateral so that they're not underwriting you as a borrower and all the additional assets that you might have to cover your debt. So essentially, we are comfortable with the dynamics of the policy, and all we are doing is underwriting the policy and not you, so it's a lot less painful than a traditional line of credit.
Is this a loan that gets repaid? And I ask because with a secured line of credit, that's the security, but you pay it off, ideally. Is that the case here?
So the great thing about this product is it's very flexible. You can pay it back if you wish, so it's completely revolving. Or you can allow the interest to capitalize. You're never making an interest payment. And instead, the bank gets paid back at the time of the policy being redeemed, which is after you pass.
Compare and contrast this option to a reverse mortgage, a business which you are relatively new to. Welcome, because there's not a lot of players who do that. What are the differences, and for whom would one be a better option than the other?
So if you do have access to a participating whole life insurance policy, this product is probably more flexible than a reverse mortgage because you can repay it as and when you wish.
You're not locked in.
You're not locked in. And the other great thing about this product is that the interest rate is lower than what you would see on a reverse mortgage. So it's prime plus 1.25%. Which right now is about 5.2%,
right.
Whereas a similar product a similar term on the reverse mortgage is about 1% higher.
What? So prime plus 2.2, just for simple math. A reverse mortgage prime
sure.
plus 2.2, this cash surrender value prime plus 1.2.
To simplify.
Ish, yeah. Ish. And a line of credit out there that's unsecured would be?
Depends
on 12,000 factors.
Exactly.
Right. Tell me about the global context. Is this something that exists in other markets and Canada is just late to the game? Or did you invent this one starry night? You're like,
so
I have an idea.
To be honest, it exists in Canada already, but it's very niche. So if you wanted to get this at one of the big banks, for example, you probably need to know the right private banker who can get their heads around life insurance policies, and it's not a clean process. Manulife Bank also offers it against their policies because obviously they understand insurance, but I think there is a really big role to be played by a third-party bank here who isn't favoring one policy over another and who also isn't trying to get the broader banking relationship of the borrower.
Do you think this makes whole life policies more compelling for seniors, or is this for people who just already have those policies?
I think it's a huge tax planning and financial planning tool, and it is actively used as a strategy when financial planners are selling life insurance policies. And I think what Equitable is trying to do is give policyholders the ability to actually use that strategy.
What conversation do you need to have with your kids if you're a senior who is going to buy this product? Hey, just so you know, because I could imagine a scenario in which it wasn't disclosed and on death, that might be a surprise to kids and to their inheritance.
I think it completely depends on what your strategy was when you set up the life insurance policy. So, for example, if you set it up as estate planning to cover capital gains for your children, you should definitely be having a conversation with your children to make them aware that the full value that they might be expecting won't be there. Although it's important to note that depending on how actively you use the leverage capacity of this policy, you could still have a very healthy death benefit left at redemption or at death.
How large are these policies? Because I think, you know, when I think about a reverse mortgage, you could own a home that is very, very expensive and you take a percentage of that equity out through a reverse mortgage. In this case, how big are these policies? Like, what would be the broad range?
We've seen policies from as small as $50,000 all the way up to $3 million.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are there any limitations on what funds can be used for?
Nope.
Support my gambling habit?
Sure.
Anything I want. Wow. And it doesn't have any effect on a life insurance policy, on the life insurance policy itself.
No. The only thing to note here is that if you do take a loan out against your life insurance policy, that policy is assigned to the bank. And so you can't further leverage it, for example, or you don't have the right to collapse the policy.
Now, so you've moved into reverse mortgages. Now there's this cash surrender value line of credit. What are some other things on the horizon that are a bit of more of a creative way for seniors in particular to unlock equity that they might not have easy access to?
So one option that we're looking at is self-directed mortgages. So you can provide a mortgage to a family member or even a stranger through your RRSP.
Is that the Smith maneuver? Is that something that's called the Smith maneuver? No, I don't know. I don't know. I've heard the phrase Smith maneuver out there. We'll see if that's the same thing. Interesting. How soon till we might see something like that?
Well, we're really focused on the CSV line of credit and understanding the insurance space and meeting those needs. So we're probably still at least a few years away.
What do you think is the most important thing from a financial literacy standpoint as it relates to some of these less conventional products? There's been enormous discussion in certain circles about reverse mortgages and the pros and cons of that. Certainly this one is a less conventional take on access to borrowing. What are the things that 50 plus folks should think about and be well versed in before they head into arrangements like these?
I think it's really important to consider, again, why you set up the policy in the first place and what the funds were intended to be used for. So, again, if it is estate planning or covering capital gains, the full amount that you need might not be available. The other thing to consider here is tax planning. This product is actually a very clean mechanism for accessing the funds from a tax-effective perspective. But for example, if you take a policy loan against your life insurance policy, it could trigger income and therefore capital gains.
Interesting. Mihima Poddar, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mihima Poddar is Equitable Bank's Vice President of Corporate and Product Development. And I think we should rebrand this line of credit like the Sparkle Magic line of credit, something like that. Stay with us. Coming up next, Price Drop, an app that finds the lowest retail prices for you even after you have made a purchase. And How I Do It, we'll ask Equitable Bank's Mohima Poddar, you just heard from her, how she manages her money. Hey, I'm on Twitter at Bruce Selry, Facebook, Bruce Selry Moolala. Follow me. Stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Moolah La, Money Made Simple with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Have you ever gotten something from a store only to find out weeks later that somewhere else is the exact same thing for cheaper? We have all been there. Meridian Credit Union has just launched a new pilot app that price matches for you. It's called Price Drop, and kind of an interesting functionality because it notifies you if a cheaper price is found. You just need to take a picture of your receipt. Andrew Homan is Meridian's Vice President of Digital Banking, and he's here to tell us more. Hello there.
Yeah, hi, Bruce.
How does this work?
How does it work? So it's really straightforward. You kind of alluded to it. There's not much more to it. You, if it's an in-store purchase, you take a photo of a receipt when you made the purchase, and then we extract the data from that receipt, and we're scanning, we're checking our databases, we're looking for matches in the marketplace. Then as soon as we find that match, we will notify you via in-app notification that the match has been found. We'll provide you what we call a proof. So that's a proof that you can take to the retailer on the other side to get that refund in the store.
How many retailers have a policy to price match after the fact?
Yeah, most of the large retailers in Canada do have a price matching policy. We cover 130 of the retailers with this service. So that'll be your Costco's, Canadian Tires, Best Buy's, Home Depot's.
I am lazy. I am a very, very lazy human being. Why do I have to take a photo of the receipt? Why isn't there some magical integration with a credit card that Meridian offers that just does this automatically?
Yeah, well, the reason for that is, at the end of the day, the credit cards, no credit card has that data on the receipt. We know you made a purchase at Canadian Tire, as an example. We don't know what that purchase is. So that's the reason why nobody has done this. We would love to
start working on that. Work on that.
Well, yeah, we're working on it. We've actually, for online, it does work somewhat that way for 10 retailers where you just forward the receipt for an online purchase. And then the same thing, we track scan the receipt. 10 retailers do have an online price matching policy. So all you do is forward the receipt and we'll go back to the retail and get that match for you digitally refunded to you.
So this is something that I would do not for a lip balm, but for a flat screen TV.
Yeah.
How much money have you found in test that people are saving? Like, are they significant percentages?
With a small sample, it's been really across the board. There has been a lot of, my latest one was on mouthwash, $1 at Walmart. I'm not going to go back. That was an in-store purchase to get that $1 back.
Right.
The biggest one we've had is exactly what you said, a 65-inch LG flat-screen TV, $500-something dollars. We've had washing machines. We've had Google Smart Home Assistants. We've had Topsoil, saving a dollar there. It's been really across the board. So we still notify you at the low end and the high end.
Why was this a priority for Meridian Credit Union? I mean, I have followed the credit unions for years. I'm a big believer in them. But this is not a product offering that I would have thought would be top of your development list.
Yeah, we're trying not to constrain ourselves to traditional financial services products at Meridian. Like a lot of credit unions, we really exist to grow the lives of our members. And that's not just marketing speak. We really believe that's embedded in our culture. So we came across, this kind of idea and we pushed aggressively because we think it's going to, help improve the lives, the overall well-being of our members from a financial and also just mental well-being. You got the best deal. Feels good.
I want to come back to the execution of this. So I take a photo in the app. I get a notification. What do I need to do to the retailer to get that money back onto my credit card?
Yeah, so you have to go back to the retailer, unfortunately. But you show them the Meridian app. So what we do is we display that deal at the other retailer, or it also price matches at the same retailer. Either way, we will display that deal. So basically a copy of their website where you go in, show the Meridian app that deal at the returns desk. You'll get to refund of the difference.
You're in a pilot. You said what? 110 retailers? Something like that?
110 retailers. Sorry.
How many retailers are in this country? When you roll this thing out full up, guns a-blazing, how many retailers do you think you need to be involved
with? We're ready to roll out, which is just a matter. We're just ironing out a few kinks. So we will be rolling out within the next few months. It will be with around that 130 retailers. The pilot is more in that we want to limit the usage initially. So it's roughly 10,000 members using the app that are available to use the beta. And it was just to really test out the service at scale, that with significant volume coming through, that it wouldn't buckle, basically. And it's proven that already.
There is no fee for the app, is there?
There is no fee whatsoever.
So what do you get out of it? What does Meridian get out of providing this app?
Yeah, as I said, we mean it. We exist to grow the lives of our members, and there's a lot of programs we have in place, and this is just one of them, that are moving outside of financial services, that are bringing things that help our members have better lives financially and otherwise. And we feel that's gonna benefit us in the long run. We're gonna have loyal members that can continue to grow that relationship.
You're getting a lot of data on that little snapshot of that receipt. Yep. I now know you have bought mouthwash.
Correct.
And you now know that person bought a flat screen TV.
Yep.
What could you do to monetize that data?
Yeah, we have no plans to monetize that data. There is, when you sign up for the service, there is consent for us to use that data for marketing purposes, for our marketing purposes. So we, if you consent to that, we may provide you, relevant target offers based on a life stage as an example. That may be something we would do with the data, but no plans beyond that.
When you say may, what do you mean by may? Like maybe someday, one day, or is that part of the thinking?
It's not part of the initial plan. But we have the data and we will have captured consent. People will explicitly say that they allow us to use the data to market to them. And that's an option they will either choose. They can still use the service if they decide not for us to use the data for that purpose.
But as you were developing the business case for this, was there some revenue potential from using that data? And I ask because when Borrowell, the lending fintech, first launched its free credit score thing, great service, every single Canadian should go do it.
Yeah.
Their business case was predicated on the fact that they were then going to offer people stuff. And they're very transparent about that. Right. Is that the same for you?
Yeah, no, we're not going to offer people explicitly that haven't consented to it. However, it's basically an engagement play, a loyalty play, right? People will be more receptive. So over time, yes, we hope, we expect that they will grow the relationship with us, whether it's adding, having more balances, opening new accounts. But it's that was what the business case was predicated on.
Can any Canadian anywhere use this?
Yes.
Because we're a national show. Yep. People in, you know, BC would be very familiar with Vancity, but not yep. with Meridian. Is that relevant to you? Why wouldn't you white label it so that other smaller credit unions could brand it for themselves in local markets?
We have no
selfish.
Plans to do that.
You're selfish. Yeah, that's why selfish. You're selfish.
Yeah, basically we may do that. I wouldn't say that's out of the question in the future. It's being discussed right now.
Very interesting. Andrew, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Andrew Homan is the Vice President of Digital Banking with Meridian Credit Union. He was here to talk about their new Price Drop app. It's now time for the Moolala How I Do It segment. It's a series of basic questions about how our guests manage their personal finances. Now, I would not ask any question of our guest that I would not answer myself. So we'll just start there. Our guest today is Mahima Podar. She is the Vice President of Corporate and Product Development with Equitable Bank. Hello there.
Hi there.
First thing that comes to your mind, you're going to buy coffee at a coffee shop. Do you pay with cash, debit, credit, or a store gift card, and why?
Credit card if they accept it, because you get rewards.
Oh, are you a rewards person? Do you think about rewards?
Definitely.
How many rewards programs do you have in your virtual wallet?
Probably 10.
Ooh, you're a dream consumer for the rewards people. Okay. What do you still use cash for, if anything? I find I use it for so very little these days. My daughter's allowance, I give that example all the time. I give it to her in cash. But other than that?
So my cleaning lady.
Uh-huh, yes.
Taxis that give me a hard time for taking credit card.
Right.
And probably stores that don't accept debit or...
Stores that don't... I thought you said stories that I can't reveal to you. Okay. Be okay. That's scandalous. All right. What about your financial life have you automated? Like, you know, bills, retirement savings, vacation savings. How automated is your financial life?
So all my bills are on auto pay. I have programmed my credit card so it pays off the balance every month.
Yeah. Retirement savings?
Figure out how much room I have and then try and top up.
Right. But it's not on auto contribute.
No.
Okay. You do that tomorrow.
Okay.
You get that. Do you have overdraft protection on your bank account?
No.
What are you nuts about and what are you casual about when it comes to your money? Like I'm, for example, I'm nuts about groceries. I'm super casual about the price of gas. When you think about your financial life, what are you nuts about? What are you casual about?
I'm casual about convenience, so I know I pay more for convenience in all aspects of yeah. my life. And then I am nuts about taking advantage of what I think is a good investment opportunity.
Right. Do you have an actual financial plan? And what I mean by that is something that's written down that someone came up with you or came up with you to look at your financial future.
I have a financial advisor, but the strategy has really been to invest as much as I can and make it grow as fast as I can without really having a well thought out plan.
How did you find your advisor?
It's my parents' advisor.
Well, I think that advisor must be glad that they've kept you because often there's some real intergenerational churn amongst advisors.
Actually, to be fair, so their past financial advisor I wasn't happy with, and so I forced them to switch.
You moved them.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you or would you hold an income property?
I do.
And what is the best part of that? What is the worst part about that?
The best part is the capital gains that have been accumulated. And then also, I'd say the ability to leverage against that policy. So just the cost of financing available on those income properties make them cash flow positive. And the worst part is dealing with tenants.
Tenants. Have you ever got that 2 a.m. call? That mythical 2 a.m.
Do you remember
call?
That flood?
You got the call more
I
than
I got
one
the call more than once.
What has been your best financial move in your life? And don't say your education. I mean, you could say your education.
I wasn't even thinking.
You weren't even thinking
lines,
of
sadly,
that.
It was probably the right.
You were
answer.
Thinking about your Andy Warhol that's in your living room.
I got involved in the real estate market in Toronto really early on when I was like 16.
Wow.
So, yeah, pre-build condos, and it's been really it gave me enough capital to kind of get in the market and keep going.
Who files your taxes, you or an accountant?
An accountant.
Have you ever done it yourself?
No.
I never have either. I never have filed my own taxes.
It seems pretty painful.
Yeah, it seems very, very painful. If you were to give one piece of advice to a young professional, say 22, 23, just starting out, knowing that the real estate market is different today than it was when you got into the real estate market, what would that advice be?
This is a little biased, but I would say strongly consider an EQ bank account, because your checking account will earn you 2.3% right now. And so even if you think about the float between your payroll coming in and your expenses coming out, you can make upwards of $100 a month.
Totally biased, but I'm willing to give you that answer anyway. Muhima, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Muhima Podar is the Vice President of Corporate and Product Development with Equitable Bank. That is our show for today. If you want some more Moolala, download and subscribe to the podcast version of our show. It's on iTunes, as well as Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, Spotify, a whole bunch of places. If you have a comment, a question, or a story idea, just send us a note to ask@moolala.ca. Thanks very much for joining us, and have a great day.